Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay and the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is the hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss different issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you are welcome to call in. I'm going to give you the call-in number. It's area code 646-716-4893. And I'll repeat that again. Area code 646-716-4893. If you prefer to email me with any questions or comments during this broadcast, please feel free to do so at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. Just like to make a few announcements, and then we'll move on to our show with one of our favorite guests who's returning tonight, Maggie. But before we get her on the phone, I just wanted to mention a few things that we're starting now to get ready. Believe it or not, I know it's only April, but we're getting together things together for our September Healing Weekend here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So if you are interested in a really wonderful weekend where women can get together and bond, tell their stories, and have some fun later in the evening to celebrate my birthday, which we always have a great party, just let me know at bonkay@aol.com, or I'll be announcing it in my upcoming newsletters. Also, starting at the end of April, I'll be starting my UK European chat for women who are in the United Kingdom or in Europe who can't make it during our regular times here in the United States. The UK chat is also great for women who can't make it at night here in the United States or Canada, but who want to make it in later in the afternoon. It will be 4 o'clock on Mondays. So if you're a woman who's in that situation, please write to me for instructions, and I'll be happy to send them to you. And also, I wanted to mention to you that we're doing really great with our support group for adult children of gay fathers. This is a very important cause that I really am promoting because of the fact that our children really are the ones who need support and help. We have a chat room once a week. We also have a Yahoo posting board, as well as a Facebook page for the young people. It's all private and confidential, so if you have sons or daughters that are 18 or over who do need support or who would like to meet other young adults or adults who are in this situation, these wonderful adults are just phenomenal, and they're going through a lot of issues, and the fact that they can have support from others really makes a difference. So now, without much further ado, before I introduce Maggie, as you know, for the last few weeks I've been playing some songs. And I'm going to bring Maggie on first so she can listen to, with me. Maggie, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's getting hot here in Philadelphia. How about where you are?
It's getting hot here as well. And a very welcome hot. It's in the 70s.
You speak for yourself.
Sunny. Well,
it's going to be 80 here on Tuesday. I thought it's
going to be about that here too, so.
I'm in the north. It's springtime. I don't want 80 degrees, but okay. We've been so lucky. We had such a great winter that I cannot complain. There was like no snow, maybe 2 inches the whole winter. And this is 2 years in a row. It's like I'm getting so spoiled that when it snows next year, I'm going to try to cry. But, you know, it's been really great now. But, Maggie, you and I were both talking about the importance of adding some music to your life, right?
Yes.
As far as having a theme song, I always tell women, you have to have a theme song. This is one that we're going to play a little bit of, and I want to dedicate this to Heather, and she'll know why. But this song, I think, really helps, you know, the straight wives that we work with, because Maggie's been a real eye-opener, and I try to be all the time. So I'll play a little of this song, and hopefully you can adopt this as one of your theme songs.
Gonna
go far, 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 Well, I'll play more later, but Maggie, what do you feel about that song?
I know that a lot of women, when they first find out, don't think there will ever be another bright, sunshiny day in their life.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get through this and you can get through it, then there will be sunshine again. There will be bright, sunshiny days.
And I really agree with you. And you know what? I think just seeing clearly in some ways means that once you learn the truth, because we're walking around with this cloud over our head, not quite knowing what's really real and what's not real. And you're always confused, especially when you're not living with the truth. Wouldn't you say that?
Yeah. And one of the women in the chat tonight talked about, you know, how she just felt numb and in shock because she had just found out. And that, you know, that clouds everything as well. You know, the truth hurts, but I think that saying the truth will set you free is very true. You know, once you know the truth, you know, and you start taking steps to take control of your life and to deal with this, then there's a better life ahead.
I know, and I really wish that women could understand that. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen for all women. And, in fact, you know, I'm very close with one of my, you know, gay husbands who came to me for support and, you know, was instrumental in his coming out to his wife, and it's been nearly 2 years. And she just won't let go. And, I mean, there are other women like that, and there are support groups online for that. For women who don't want to have their marriages end, and so they'll use all kinds of, you know, tactics to keep the husband feeling guilty or guilt-ridden, as if that's going to make the difference in the end. And I just feel so bad that they don't just accept what is. That one, you know, why would you want to be in a marriage with a gay husband? I mean, it's one thing when you don't know, but it's another thing when you find out.
Right.
And you say, well, we can live in this marriage anyway. There are a lot of couples that don't have sex. You know, sex isn't the tell-all of the marriage. And we have a family together. We have kids together. You know, why can't we just, you know, make this work? What do you think about that?
I think it's an awfully sad way to live your life. I mean, you're perpetuating the lie. And I have to admit that very early on, there was one point where I thought, you know, well, you know, maybe that's what we could do. Because in my mind, divorce would have rewarded him and punished me. That was my way of thinking at that point in time. And then as I began to read more and learn more, and I found your group, and I started sharing with some of my very closest friends, they made me realize that was no kind of life for me to have to live.
I know. It's like you weren't put on earth to have to live a life that's not authentic. And things happen. Situations happen. You know, we're certainly understanding gay men why they get married and, you know, how they compartmentalize once they're married because they can't face who they are. I mean, we understand it, you know, certainly on an intellectual level. But my point is that life wasn't made to be that complicated for anyone.
No.
And why are women willing to settle for so little once they know? You know, once a husband tells you, look, I'm gay, it's not that I want to be gay, it's just this is how I am. I mean, why can't women just say, all right, you know, like I say, this one particular woman I have in mind, you know, who reflects a lot of other women because she's part of an online group that they teach each other how to do this stuff. You know, she really feels that they can be a family and that, you know, they didn't have that much sex to start with. Well, that's because he's gay. And she was, you know, happy living with him because she loves him. But, I mean, is that really what marriage is about? And he's not happy. You know, he's just there because of guilt, you know, because he feels so guilt-ridden because she keeps making him feel guilty.
Yeah.
So
I know in my case, I was afraid. Initially, that was what was driving me, was this, you know, overpowering fear. I had been a stay-at-home wife and mother for the majority of our marriage. I didn't have any kind of real marketable career or marketable skill. And And so, you know, there was this fear of, you know, what in the world was I going to do and what was I going to be if I wasn't a wife anymore? And then I came to realize that, you know, living in fear is just not a way to live.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to find a part-time job, and I moved out on my own. It's the first time I've ever lived on my own in my life. And
were you scared when you had to do that? Maybe you could talk a little bit about that, Max.
Absolutely. I was scared to death. That's probably the scariest thing I've ever done in my life, was to confront my ex-husband and say, you know, I know that you're gay, and I know that you've been, you know, having homosexual affairs, and I want a divorce. That was absolutely, you know, I mean, I was just almost, you know, scared, you know, beyond being able to do anything. But I knew it was what I had to do. And so you just, you know, you dig down deep inside, and you'll find strength that you never knew you had.
And for some women, it takes longer, and we certainly understand that. You know, tell women you have to be emotionally free first before you can be physically free, because a lot of women are so paralyzed into inaction because they're overwhelmed by the thought of, what am I going to do? And we always tell women, take your time, get a game plan. In fact, you were so instrumental in putting together a beautiful divorce kit for women with all the steps they need to do and take and all the information they have to gather. And I know that many women have asked for that kit, and I'm happy to send it to them. Or if you're listening for the first time to Maggie about the divorce kit, you know, feel free to write to me at bondk@aol.com. And maybe you could talk a little bit about the divorce kit for a minute or two.
Yeah. Well, the divorce kit is just forms that my divorce attorney gave to me to fill out when I went through my divorce. There's one that is a financial packet. It, you know, is just a list of all the different things that you need to gather information on: bank accounts, savings accounts, retirement accounts, insurance policies, you know, any kind of real property you own. You can list, you know, personal property, all that sort of thing. And then there's another one that's just, you know, there's a things to do list. If there's a custody situation, if you've got, you know, minor children, there's another one that's things to do if you don't have custody. But it's like, you know, write down what your wish list is, you know, what you want out of the divorce, you know, what you want in the way of child support and visitation and health insurance and that sort of thing. Another thing my attorney asked me to do is to write a detailed history of my marriage. And she said, I need to know everything good and bad about you. And that's one thing I tell people, you know, be completely honest with your attorney. They need to know everything. My ex-husband wasn't. And so he got blindsided at mediation when I presented him with a list of his wrongdoings, and his attorney was sitting there just as shocked as he was.
You know, I think, you know, another point we could bring up, you know, that why it's so important to have this divorce kit is because there are so many things when it comes to divorce. And when you're on the spot, it's really hard to think of everything. You know, your mind is clouded. You're not clear on what you have to have ready. And then if it hits you all at once, you really feel overwhelmed. So this gives you time to put things together so that before you see your attorney or get, you know, have the case start moving, all pieces are in place. Wouldn't you say that?
Right. And it also, if you're doing this before you ever even approach your husband about a divorce, it means he's not going to be able to hide things from you.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've seen women where that's happened to them. You know, they've gone to the husband and said, I know you're having an affair. You know, I want a divorce. And then the husband starts shutting things down. They'll lock the wife out of the checking account. They'll change the password on the access to online banking, to the cell phone records, and the wife is sitting there. She doesn't have access to anything. So, you know, if you can get it before you confront them, then, you know, you stand a much better chance of being able to get a better, clearer overall picture of, you know, of your financial situation.
And also, once again, all the documents you say to get ready in there.
Right, yeah.
You know, everything is so important. And I know that when I read the list, I was overwhelmed. You know, and so happy that I don't have to go through that, you know, at this point of time. You know, it's already behind me. But first of all, you know, when my marriage ended, it was many years ago, so maybe it wasn't quite as complicated, and we didn't really have property. We have children, but not property. But for people who have homes and property and other assets, you know, there's a lot to think about, and that's why this list is really wonderful. I mean, I really love it. So if any of you would like this divorce kit, please write to me at bondk@aol.com. And, you know, this is a kit that Maggie put together, and I'll be more than happy to help you, you know, to send it right out to you. So I think that was really important. And also, you know, the whole healing process, you know, Maggie, maybe you can talk a little bit about that with divorce. It's a process, right?
Absolutely, it's a process. One of the things that I did for myself was I found a divorce recovery group. That was a local face-to-face type group, and it's based around the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross grief model of the five stages of grief: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And I went through all of those stages. I mean, I told you earlier, you know, I at first I thought, you know, yeah, he's gay, but, you know, maybe we can stay married. And even initially, you know, when I saw the first inklings, you know, of you know, thinking, you know, of evidence that he was gay, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, no, this can't be right. So, you know, that there was denial about a number of things. And then I have to say, I'm still angry. I still harbor a lot of anger over a lot of things that were done, but that's better.
And when you say you harbor a lot of anger, let's talk a little bit. You were married a long time.
I was married. I found out about 6 months before my 36th wedding anniversary.
Right. So that's a lifetime, you know, as far as I'm concerned, your whole adult life practically being married to a man who you put your trust and your hopes and your dreams and your love and had children with. And believe that your marriage was based on those moral values. You came from, you know, somewhat, you know, good religious kind of background, right?
Yeah, his father was a minister.
Right. So there was a lot of, you know, religious values in place also. So you go into a marriage expecting it to be forever. I mean, that's what you're thinking when you get married.
Right.
And then
nobody
when something
gets
like
married
this happens,
planning on divorce.
And nobody gets married planning on gay. On top of divorce,
right?
Which I think that, you know, I tell women often, in fact, I'm writing a little article on this now, because people say to me, well, you know, I took my marriage vows and I take them very seriously. And I say that when you get married and you have your wedding vows, you know, for rich or poor, in sickness and in health, unless you're including in straight and in gay, then you didn't, you know, you didn't sign up for that. I mean, that's something that's unexpected in a marriage. And something that's really not acceptable in a marriage. Do you feel that way?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and if anybody's, you know, sitting there thinking they can't get divorced because their religion, you know, opposes that, you know, there's biblical background for, you know, if you're able to prove your husband has committed adultery, that's biblical grounds for divorce. Just being unevenly yoked. You know, which, you know, one partner being straight and one partner being gay. That's unevenly yoked in a marriage. That's biblical grounds for divorce. There's absolutely no reason to have to stay in a marriage like that, even for religious reasons.
And, in fact, we're going to be having Patsy Ray Dawson on our show in a few weeks for people who are really torn over the religious issues, because Patsy's really wonderful. As from the Christian point of view of giving you all the different scriptures on why it's okay to get divorced.
Yes, she has very good information.
Excellent information. And, you know, when you got married, you had two children, right?
Yes.
And went on to have grandchildren. So you really felt that your life was settled and set when this news hit you, correct?
Oh, yeah. I thought that we were kind of had hit the point where we were cruising along comfortably. The kids were grown, they were out of the nest, You know, they were out of college. You know, we were finally making some money. We were able to save some money. There was money left over at the end of the month. We had moved into our dream home. Yeah, I thought we had, you know, we had it made.
Now, I'd like to bring up this next subject because we've talked about it and you said you'd be willing to share on this one because I know how many of our women really feel very stupid. You know, that's the word I'm going to use. When they find out, because they keep saying, how could I have not seen this? How didn't I see the red flags? And I say, well, a lot of times you don't see those red flags because you're not even looking for them. How would you see them? And wasn't that your situation as well?
Right, yeah. I mean, I still look back, you know, and even in hindsight, there's really not anything that I can put my finger on, you know, that would have, you know, made me think that my husband was gay.
Mm-hmm.
Marriages, you know, a good marriage should be built on trust. And the very thing that relationship is built on can be used against you. You know, my husband, because I trusted him so much, you know, if he said, I have to work late, I believed him. I had no reason not to.
Exactly.
But he wasn't working late. He was hooking up with some guy at a hotel.
Right, but how would you know that? I mean,
no,
there were
no
telltale signs, right?
There were no telltale signs.
It sounded
logical
that he had to work late. It wasn't uncommon.
Right. I mean,
he's in a
management position, you know, a very responsible position, you know. Sometimes he had to work late. You know, he had to go out of town on business, which was another opportunity for him to hook up. But that was just part of the job, and I accepted that. You know, it wasn't like, you know, he was, you know, blaming or anything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There just wasn't anything.
And, I mean, I think that women have to understand this concept that, you know, we're so used to the stereotypes when we see gay men like Liberace and Paul Lind, you know, just to name a couple of them, but the men who were very effeminate in their mannerisms, the ones who have that deflection in their talking. And that's how we understand gay to be. And that for some people it is like that. But that's the only kind of information we have to go on. When we meet a man who wants to marry us, who's a man that we can fall in love with, who makes love to us, you know, even if it, you know, starts waning off after a while. But initially, you know, you're there having children with them. You're a family unit. I mean, why would we think gay? So I think that women are really much too hard on themselves when they, you know, when they find out. How could they not see it? It's easy not to see it, I think.
You know, you don't see what you're not looking for. And you're definitely not looking for that in your marriage because that's, you know.
And I think these guys are so good at lying about it, don't you think so? I mean, they've been lying their whole lives, so, you know, it's no big deal.
Yeah, they've become consummate liars, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, many of them are just, you know, very controlling. Was yours controlling?
Not extremely controlling. You know, he liked to be in charge, and, I mean, I let him be the head of the household, but, I mean, it wasn't like I was a submissive wife or anything like that. I had things that I was in charge of, and he had things that he was in charge of, but I considered him to be the head of the household. But no, he wasn't particularly controlling.
Because a lot of them are. You know, women say, well, that, you know, they should have seen that. Well, a lot of men are controlling, but it just so happens a lot of these men are controlling because they can't control who they are. So they're always trying to control everything, you know, surrounding them, including you. You know, they don't want you having friends or they're monitoring your phone calls because they're so afraid that their secret's going to get out. So, but I think that women can't be so hard on themselves that they can't see, you know, red flags waving in their face. You know, my mother always used to say if gay people, you know, gay men had a scarlet G on their forehead, then you could tell.
It would be so easy, if that was the case.
But they don't. You know, that's the whole thing. So how would we know? And the truth of the matter is I think a lot of them don't know either. I think a lot of them don't understand gay. You know, they know they have attractions for men, but the fact is they fall in love with a woman. And they're able to perform with the woman. They're able to have sex with her. And maybe it's not the best thing, but it's good enough, and they don't want to be gay. You know, so this is one way they don't have to be. I don't think they understand. It's not something they can control either. So
and
I think that takes time.
Yeah, and men of my generation, and I'm in my early 60s, there was kind of a prevailing school of thought that if you got married, that would, quote-unquote, cure you.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, that may be one reason why my husband married me, was that, you know, he came from this religious family, you know, his father was a minister. There was no way he could, you know, he could openly be gay if he even suspected he was gay at the time. But, you know, if he did, maybe he thought, you know, if I get married, have a family, that's going to cure it. And it didn't, because you can't cure gay.
Let me ask your opinion of this. I had a man who got in touch with me recently, and I work with, you know, I guess maybe 300 men a year who come to me for help. Because they go on my webpage to see gay husbands, and then I have a tab on there for coming out to your wife, you know, to give men support in doing it. You know, I'm very supportive of any man telling his wife the truth. Whether she wants to hear it or not, she deserves to hear it. So this one man recently came to me, I guess about 3 weeks ago, and it was really interesting where he said that, you know, in his state, wherever, you know, I won't mention what state it is, but as in many states, the divorce law is like a 50-50 deal. And, you know, you work with the law, so you understand that better, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Are most states that way, you think?
A lot of states are 50-50, you know, kind of an equitable distribution.
Mm-hmm. So he said that his wife wanted more than the 50-50. She wanted to keep the house. And, you know, that would mean it would be more like a 70-50 or 80, you know, 30, you know, 80-20, 70-30, you know, whatever the percentage was, it wouldn't be 50-50. And he wanted to know my opinion. And they were married for 30 years, and it wasn't a good marriage. And he told me the truth, you know, that he wasn't very good to her because of the fact that he was frustrated and he took it out on her because he wasn't being honest. And he says, but the law here says 50-50, what do I think? And I said, I'm going to be quite honest with you. I think that you took up 30 years of her life under a false pretense, making her feel every day of her life there's something wrong with her because she could never make you happy. You didn't want her. You wouldn't touch her. You made her think there's something wrong. You stole away her sexuality. And I think that she should get whatever she asked for. And I said, I'm being honest with you. I mean, that's how I felt.
And
believe it or not,
thing,
he believed it. He said that, you know, he doesn't know if he would go for everything, but he says he definitely feels she should get more.
Right. And another thing to remember, too, is that equitable does not necessarily mean equal.
Mm-hmm. Can you explain that?
I asked for 70% of the equity in our house. Because
mm-hmm.
my husband had committed adultery, I had to, give a reason for asking for more than 50% of the equity. Some things you can only get 50% of by
mm-hmm.
law, and understand, family law is very state specific, so it varies from state to state. I'm just telling you what it is in my state. There are some things like his retirement account. I could only get 50% of that by law.
Mm-hmm.
The home equity, however, was negotiable. So I asked for 70% of it and figured I would negotiate down. And I ended up getting 60%. But because I was asking for more than 50%, I had to give a reason. And so I cited, you know, his adultery. That 60% was equitable given the circumstances, even though it was not equal. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It does. But, you know, do you think that varies from state to state?
I really don't know because I don't know the divorce laws in other states. You know, some states are community property states and other states
mm-hmm.
aren't. And, you know, so that's why it's so important to you know, to have an attorney and, you know, to have one who specializes in family law, because they're going to be on top of the laws in your state, and they're going to know exactly what needs to be done. You might be able to find a cheaper lawyer, but cheaper isn't always better. I've actually seen people end up spending more money by going to just like a general, you know, someone in general law practice who really didn't know what they were doing, and they kind of had to sort of wander around and figure it out. And all that time, you know, they're billing the client X many dollars per hour, whereas if you go to somebody that specializes in family law, they know exactly what needs to be done. And they're not going to, you know, fool around and do things that don't need to be done, and you're paying for every hour of that.
And I think
that's such an important point.
Attorney. Yeah, because I know somebody who recently got involved in a legal suit. You know, it's been going on for several years, and he hired the wrong attorney. He hired someone who sold him a bill of goods who didn't have experience in this particular field that he was being sued in. And as a result, instead of spending maybe, you know, $20,000 on the case, it was up to $60,000, $70,000.
Yeah.
And he still didn't win the case because this guy didn't understand this type of law. So I think that's really important. And also, I tell women this about counselors, but I think that I would tell them the same thing about a lawyer. You can tell me if you agree or not. You know, I tell women with counselors, you have to make a connection, and if you see that within a short time, it's just not happening for you, you're not benefiting, you know, give it 3 or 4 sessions. But if there's no connection at all, then it's not the right match, and you have to move on. And I think with
Absolutely.
A lawyer, it's the same thing. With a lawyer, if you don't feel a connection, if you don't feel that lawyer is an advocate for you and fighting for you, then you need to move on. Am I wrong in saying that?
I think that's absolutely correct. And with most attorneys, you can go in, you know, and do a consultation. You know, in the case of the firm that I work in, we charge for that consultation because you're getting an hour's worth of attorney's time and advice. People, mm-hmm. A lot of people say, well, you know, well, I can go to so-and-so and they do free consultations. Well, that person is a personal injury lawyer. And if they get a settlement for you, they're going to take a percentage of that. We
mm-hmm.
don't take a percentage of your divorce settlement. So we have to, you know, you have to pay us for the attorney's time. But so you can go in and do a consultation and you can kind of get a feel for, you know, for how do you click with the attorney. Ask around. That's
mm-hmm.
what I did. My hairdresser had been through a fairly contentious divorce about 2 years before mine, and she just raved about how wonderful her attorney was. And so when I realized that I needed a divorce attorney, I picked up the telephone and I called her and I said, "Who is your attorney?" And so that's a lot of it is word of mouth.
Right. Find someone who's had a successful divorce,
customers.
Right? Instead of you look for somebody who's had a successful divorce.
Right. Yeah, somebody who's been happy
with divorce experience.
Yeah, somebody who's been happy with the outcome of their divorce and the way their attorney, you know, handled it. Yeah. Ask around, because chances are you know somebody that's been divorced.
You know, one of the things that people love the most about having you on the show, although I didn't want to tell you ahead of time, is the fact that you have such wonderful advice, of course, but one of the things they love is the fact that you have such great ideas in how to catch your husband.
Oh.
I mean, you're like our best detective that we have.
Oh.
So I was wondering if maybe you could give some advice to women who are just on the brink of finding out or they're not sure. You know, you were really persistent when you were finding out, right?
Right. Well, mine left his email open, and I saw some emails between him and another man, and they were arranging to meet at a motel, and so I was able to get back into his email because he had given me the password for something else once before, and I thought, well, if he's like me, all of his passwords are alike. And they were. So I was able to get into his email, and once I got in there, I saw that he had an account on an online gay dating site. And there are numerous ones.
Mm-hmm.
that, you know, that men use. And then there are even apps for smartphones. My ex-husband didn't have a smartphone. But so what I did was I just created fake accounts on, or a fake account on the gay dating site that he was on, and basically kind of made myself very attractive to him, and he bit. And so I made arrangements to meet with him at a coffee shop, and of course I didn't show up, but I parked across the street and watched him drive up and go in and wait, and he would come out every so often and look at his watch and check his cell phone, and then finally he, you know, got in his car and drove away. And as he was driving away, my cell phone rang, and I answered it, and he said, "Well, I just wanted to let you know I'm just now leaving work." And I thought, "You sorry lying son of a gun." So, you know, I mean, that was sort of the beginning. I remember one night, this particular website had a chat room on it, and one night he was upstairs at his computer, and I was downstairs at my computer, and we were chatting, and he thought he was chatting with a gay man.
That's so incredible to me.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
so
he told me all
that.
Kinds of things, you know. He just spilled his guts. His mother obviously never told him, don't talk to strangers on the Internet.
That is really amazing.
So, maybe women can look on some of those, you know, websites, and, you know, they may be able to find their husband on there. I know some of the women in the chat room have found their husbands.
On Craigslist. I mean, a lot of women find their husbands on Craigslist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Craigslist is a big one, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of gay dating sites, and if any of you would like to have a list of them, I have a list of all the gay dating sites, or the, you know, certainly the most popular ones, and it was sent to me by a man who asked me to advertise the gay dating sites on my website, and I told him that I would not be able to do that, but I was happy to have the list so that I could share it with our women. So if any of you are interested in this list, I'd be happy to send it to you. Just email me at bondk@aol.com, and it will be emailed right back to you. But I feel that, you know, women also have to be prepared to find the worst emotionally. Don't you think so?
Oh, yeah. And it can be devastating. You know, there were times when I thought it couldn't get any worse, and it did. You know, I thought it was bad enough that he was picking up men and bringing them to our house and picking up men when he traveled out of town and inviting them to his hotel room. But one night he met some man out in the woods, you know, off of a deserted road. You know, and honestly, I remember telling my sister one time, I said, one of these days, the maid is going to find him dead in a hotel room, you know, because he's picked up the wrong person. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be devastating what you find out.
You know, I always tell women they have to be emotionally prepared. You know, everybody wants to find out the truth, but, you know, you have to mentally be ready for it, because the things you're going to find when you really start looking can really shock you and repulse you. And that's why I say it's so important to be emotionally ready. And because I think once you really start looking, you will find, don't you think so?
Yeah. And one positive side to that, at least it was for me, was that it made me mad, and it kept me mad enough to keep fighting, because divorce is not an easy process. The wheels of justice sometimes turn very slowly. And so, and at one point I remember telling somebody, I can understand why women stay in bad marriages, because it is so hard to get a divorce. You get married by going and getting a marriage license, and you know, say I do, and that's it. And a divorce takes way longer than that. So, you know, finding out this stuff, you know, like I said, there can be a positive side to it, in that it can keep you mad enough to keep fighting for what's right. and to keep fighting for, you know, what you deserve in terms of a divorce settlement and getting out of your marriage.
Mm-hmm. And it's really true. You know, it's like I said, there's so many complexities of this. I mean, here are some of the questions women ask, and I don't have any answers for it, and you probably don't either, but we can really discuss it anyway. One of the things that they ask is, why isn't gay grounds for divorce? And I don't understand why it's not. Do you?
I don't understand either. I kind of have an idea that if this whole gay marriage thing ever goes through and becomes, you know, and states start recognizing gay marriage, then maybe it might become grounds for divorce. But, you know, I mean, I think it should be grounds for divorce because basically it's fraud.
It is fraud. So why can't people use that as a fraud case?
Yeah. They'd have to change the statutes, you know, because like I said, divorce law is determined by the state. And in some states, you know, the only grounds for divorce is, you know, incompatibility or irreconcilable differences, whereas in other states you can cite that or you can cite adultery or, you know, whatever. So,
right, but I really do think that when a partner is gay, that's an irreconcilable difference, don't you?
It's definitely an irreconcilable difference, and in a lot of cases there's adultery involved. And
right.
You know.
I guess the whole thing would be, in many cases, it'd be hard to prove that the guy is hiding it. But there's a lot of cases where we have proof, so it's harder to hide. But, like, someone went to court recently in the last couple of weeks, and they were showing proof, and the man was saying, well, maybe I put an ad in that paper, but it doesn't mean that I actually met up with somebody. Or, you know, sometimes, you know, I just like to see what other people look like. You know, I'm just having comparison issues. You know, they come up with the most bizarre stories. And, in fact, we have a group book coming out, Gay Husbands Say the Darndest Things, you know, sometime in June, where I invited women to send me in, you know, all these things that their husbands tell them when they confront them in order to deny that they're gay or to explain it away. So this would be like for women who just don't, they're not sure. When they hear all these stories from these other women, they'll hear something that they've been hearing, and there's nothing that's been missed in this particular book.
Right.
I mean, the stories are amazing, you know, or the sayings what the guys are telling them are amazing. But I guess that might be hard when you really can't prove it. And maybe that's why it's not part of that, but I definitely feel it should be.
Yeah.
Just like I feel that if a man is gay, then he should be the one paying for the divorce expenses. I mean, you're married to a gay man. It can't work. It's not your fault. You've done everything right, but he's gay, so it's not going to be working. Why should you have to spend thousands of dollars to get a divorce? I don't understand that.
And, you know, you might be able to get, I mean, I got my divorce costs in mine. My ex-husband had to pay, you know, my divorce costs. But then again, I had him on multiple counts of adultery. So.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that,
and that's
that
where the detective
been.
Work really comes in. That's important, right?
Yeah. I mean, I had the goods on him. There was no way he was going to be able to squirm out of it or explain it away.
And, you know, for those people who are saying, well, how can I get proof? How can I get proof? I mean, I know it's difficult, but if you're suspicious, you owe it to yourself to do whatever you have to. In a few weeks, sometime in May, I'm having a guest speaker who's really wonderful. He's a private investigator, and he's in California. And he's going to be on our show talking about things that you can do. I mean, even if you don't get a private investigator, you know, some tips to look out for. But we do have on my website where it says catch him, like there's all this different ways to buy, you know, it's pretty inexpensive spyware. Where you can put a pen in a room and it's going to record his conversations when you're not in the room, when he's making calls on his cell phone or talking to people or put it in his car and he won't even notice it's there. I mean, I would do everything humanly possible because, like you say, Maggie, when you get to court, having this kind of adultery evidence can really make the case or break it, right?
Right. And even if you're not going to court, I didn't go to court, we did mediation. But the fact that I had all of that weighed very heavily on my side and in my favor. You know, I was able to make a lot more demands because I did have such a plethora of evidence.
Mm-hmm. In fact, one of our women, you know, she used the phone spyware, so she recorded. She had all the conversations and the texting and everything else, and it really, she never had to go in front of the judge. She just showed it to her, you know, husband's attorney, and they were able to make a generous settlement in her favor because he didn't want this coming out in the public eye.
Right, yeah, because, you know, most of the time court records are public, or, you know, it's public record.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these guys, they don't want that out there. So, you know, if you've got a lot of evidence, you know, may be able to keep it out of court.
Right. And could you talk a little bit and explain to people what the difference is between going to court for divorce and mediation?
Well, actually, there's three types of divorces, at least in my state. And again, I'll give this caveat that family law is very state-specific, so it may vary in the state that you're in. In my state, you can do an uncontested divorce, and that's where you and your spouse sit down and you figure out how you're going to divide everything up. And if you have small children, you come up with, you know, who's going to have, you know, physical custody of the children and what the visitation schedule is going to be and all of that stuff. And you write it all down, and then you take it to your attorney, and the attorney puts it in legal form, and that's signed by both parties and sent to the judge, and the judge signs off on it. And that's the least expensive way to get a divorce in this state. The other end of the spectrum is the contested divorce, and that's where one party sues the other party for divorce. And you go to court, and you basically let a third party who doesn't know you and doesn't know your family and has no vested interest in anything, and I'm talking about the judge, you let the judge decide the rest of your life. And honestly, you know, I think a lot of women really, they say they want to go to court because it's an opportunity for you to get your story out there. But do you really want a third party deciding the rest of your life? I really didn't want to do that. So we had a mediated divorce, and that's where both parties sit down. We were in the two different conference rooms with our attorneys and an unbiased mediator went from room to room. I started off because I was the one who asked for the divorce. I sent over my settlement offer. This is what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, said, well, you know, we'll offer this. It was like offer and counteroffer and counteroffer. And we went back and forth. And after about 5 hours, we had hammered out an agreement. And we both signed off on it. And that was sent to the judge. So that's the three types of divorces in my state: the uncontested, the contested, and the mediated.
I know this sounds like a silly question, but since I'm not familiar with it, what kind of training does a mediator have?
Most of the time, they are attorneys,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes they're even former judges.
Okay.
So they have had you know, training in mediation. I think there,
mm-hmm.
there is, you know, some type of training that they go to for mediation. So that they know how to, you know, kind of diffuse situations. And then, of course, they're going to have to know the law as well. You know, like in my case, you know, the fact that, yes, I could ask for more than 50% of the home equity, but no, I couldn't ask for more than 50% of his retirement account. So so they do have training, and they do have
right,
a background.
Right, it's not just somebody who comes off the street.
Yeah, no, it's not just somebody off the street. No, it's somebody who has been trained for this.
Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, if it can be resolved at the mediation level, of course, that's the best of all situations, right?
Well, the uncontested would be the cheapest, and, you know, if you and your spouse can come to an agreement, most of the uncontested divorces that I see that go through are younger couples where they really
mm-hmm.
don't have many assets. They don't have a lot to have to split up. And so it's just a lot easier. They also don't have a lot of money to spend on a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you know, it's easier for them that way. By the time you've been married, you know, 25, 30, 35 years, you've got a lot more to split up. And, you know, if it's a contentious situation, you know, where you're both mad at each other, you know, you're not going to be able to sit down across the kitchen table and say, well, yeah, I'll give you half of that and, you know, I'll take the house and you take the car and, you know, we'll split the furniture in half. You know, you're probably not going to be able to do that. That's where the mediator comes into play.
But you say mediator, but we want to be clear that it's really important for women to get legal advice from an attorney, right?
Right, yes. You definitely need an attorney.
Because some women say, well, I'm not even going to bother because we're just going to go to mediation. He said he'll give me this or that. But when you get there, it could be a whole different story, right?
It can be a whole different story. You need somebody who is solely representing you. And I don't know about other states, but in this state, it is illegal for one attorney to represent both parties in a divorce. So, I mean, some people do represent themselves. I wouldn't recommend it because unless you're an attorney, you don't know the law and you don't know whether they're telling you the truth or not. So, yes, it's very important for you to have an attorney that's, you know, that's representing you and only you and has your best interest at heart.
And I think that women have this misconception that, well, my husband's promising, you know, he said he feels really bad for everything and he wants me to have this and that. But I've seen this turn so many times. And, I mean, I'm not saying every guy's out to screw you because that's not the case. But a lot of these men are very unstable to start with. They've been living a lie for all these years. They haven't been treating you that nice to start with. And now when it comes time to leaving you, if you think that it's going to be guilt money they're giving you, that's not happening either. Because, you know, they start resenting you and thinking, why should they be giving you money? And a lot of these guys really get things twisted in their minds, and I think that's why so many of them turn on their wives. Like, they look at their wives as the keeper of the key from their freedom, that, you know, because they felt obligated to stay with the family and the wife, that now it's their turn, and they can just turn their backs on their family, because I see this happen, you know, too many times. And so they're not going to be, if they haven't been there for you in many ways for many years, you can be sure when it comes to giving you what's yours, they're not going to be there either.
Right.
And a lot of these guys have been hiding money, wouldn't you say so?
Sometimes they have, yeah.
They've had a lifetime to prepare for this, and you haven't. You know, when they come to you or you find out the truth, you have to remember many times, like in your case, it was over 30-some years of marriage. You know, if your husband wanted to prepare for this, he could have been stashing away money, saying, well, someday I'm going to get out of the marriage and I'm not going to be leaving her stuff that she doesn't have to know about. I think that's pretty common, don't you?
Yeah, one of the things that I discovered when I was searching through his computer and all these other things was that he had purchased a how to change your identity kit. And then once we got to mediation, there was, in addition to the bank accounts and the retirement accounts, there was a large amount of cash that appeared on the, you know, in the settlement stuff. And my attorney looked at me and she said, did you know about that? And I said, I had no clue he had that much cash.
And how did you find that out?
Well, he disclosed it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he disclosed that cash. But he told me the next day, he said, at one point, I had honestly considered just leaving and disappearing. And I'm thinking, wow, how selfish is that? Where would that have left me and the children if you had done that?
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, some people do. And, you know, I feel so bad because they tell me, you know, he was a wonderful father, and now my kids are alienated from them. Or, you know, he's not looking back. He's just moving ahead. And, you know, the kids don't understand this because here they not only lose, you know, a secure family, but their father's in some other world that they're unfamiliar with and don't want to really know about. Where they're not comfortable with. And, you know, it just starts so much anguish. And, you know, like I say, a lot of these guys are pretty manipulating. I have a good friend who's part of our support system, in our support chat, and, you know, she just recently split with her, you know, husband, and they have children. He's constantly manipulating her and trying to make her feel guilty. as far as the whole separation is concerned, and using their religious background as part of the evidence why she should keep giving him more chances. And now that, you know, she said, no, I'm not going to live like this. And, of course, it's difficult because then he can say to the kids, which he does, well, I was happy in the marriage. I don't know why mommy's being like this. You know, there's so many issues with these guys that it's really sad, you know, that they don't take the responsibility and just do the right thing. Not to say that some don't, but I know a lot more don't than do.
Right.
And especially in the early years. It's like now they're off to find their own lives because they feel they've been penalized all these years and not being able to have it. And now they're going to go get it. And they don't care who's going to be hurt as a result. Or if they've compartmentalized their whole marriage, why shouldn't they compartmentalize their whole divorce and think that they're doing everything right? I mean, I see that happening too. You know, how many times do I hear men say, well, I'm a great father, I do everything for my children, but they're not there for them.
Yeah, that is one thing.
That happens in regular divorce too, because you work with divorce.
Yeah, that's, you know, they leave this wake, you know, trail of destruction in their wake, and they just don't care. And a lot of them, you know, will refuse to go to mediation. You know, they'll push it to trial simply out of spite. You know, by golly, you know, they're going to fight, and they don't care who they hurt in the process.
Yeah, I'm never going to understand it. And you know
I think it's part of this sociopathic,
narcissistic pattern.
Narcissistic, you know, yeah, pattern. You know, I'm, you know, it's going to be my way or the highway, and
it would have to be because you know you work with straight marriages that are getting divorced, and you know I could understand in those circumstances where people become enemies. You know, that they may, you know, they grew apart, they grew in different directions, they got married too young, they married the wrong person. You know, there's so many different reasons. But so many times in these marriages, you know, these men can't say that about their wives who are trying harder than anyone I know, more loving than anyone I know, because they don't know what the problem is. And even when they find out what the problem is, then they think, oh, guess what? I can fix this problem. If I love my husband enough, he's not going to have those thoughts. You know, I'm embarrassed to say to you that I thought that. You know, I thought if I could be a better wife, if I could do better, if I could make him happy here in bed, I could do more things that, you know, I'm really not into, but he is, you know, it'll make everything better, and he won't think about guys. And that just doesn't happen. I mean, I just want women to know that no matter how hard you try, it's never going to work. Wouldn't you say that?
Yeah. I mean, and that's one thing I never thought. You know, I knew that, you know, gay is gay, and there's no changing it. So there wasn't anything that I could do that would make him be straight.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's where I think women have to learn to accept what is.
Right.
You know, you didn't make it, and you can't change it. And, you know, if you didn't create it, then you can't stop it. It's not in your power to do that.
Right. I never said, what did I do to deserve this? Because I didn't do anything to deserve this.
Mm-hmm.
I did ask why me a lot of times. And sometimes I still ask, you know, why me? And I like to think that, you know, maybe, you know, like doing your show, I can help somebody else, you know.
Well, that's true. And I think that we're all
pay it forward.
Exactly. And we're a tight-knit, you know, community of support. And I'm really excited to say that we do have a lot of support for women. You know, our show every week, thousands of women.
So important.
Isn't it? You know, finding support during this time is very important. I know that, you know, thousands of women listen to this show, not only in the United States and Canada, but also I get letters all the time from Australia and from England and from other countries where women speak English. You know, they could be relocated somewhere else, women in the service from all over. And we also have the online support chat 3 times a week for our women. We have our Facebook private rooms if you're part of our chat. You know, we have all kinds of support, the newsletters every month. The important thing is to stay connected and not have to feel like you're alone. Even if you need a pain pal, I have women who are very generous with their time and willing to help give support to other women one-on-one. If you don't want to be part of a group, that's fine too. My healing weekends twice a year. So the support is there. You just have to reach your hand out and somebody will be there to give it to you.
Right.
And Maggie, I can't thank you.
Just as the support is important, I think it's also you need to understand that you're probably going to lose some friends too. And, you know, if you realize that somebody is not in your corner and is not your friend anymore, and you know, then you need to get, you know, you need to move away from them, because you don't need to be surrounded by anybody that's toxic. You know, there's too many people that are willing to support you to hang on to people that don't.
Right. If people are questioning you or they want to know, you know, how didn't you know this, or you must have been stupid, you know, these are not people giving you the kind of support that you need during this time.
Right.
And that's okay. You don't need it because you can get it from us. But you also don't have to stay around people who are going to make you feel worse than you need to feel, right?
Right. Absolutely.
So I want to thank you so much for being our guest, Maggie, and don't worry, I'll be imposing again in a couple of months. You're going to come back with your wisdom and your help and your comfort to women. And I really appreciate the time that you've taken, and you do help people all the time. All of our women are so appreciative when they hear you. So
I'm
thanks so much. And next week I'm going to have a special guest on my show. I know this is going to be a very strange kind of show, but I think it's so important. I'll get your opinion on this before we go. You know, a lot of times people don't understand with young people in their teens what they struggle going through being gay. And I have a young man next week who's 19 years old, who is gay, who recently came out and told me. And, you know, he struggled with it his whole life. And I really want women to understand that there's always that possibility that you could have a child that's gay, and what those children go through as they're coming of age. And he's very happy to be out. He's never going to marry a woman. You know, he's, you know, happy with himself and who he is. And he really has, you know, had a lot of struggles and problems, you know, with that issue in school and with other kids. So I think his story will be very compelling. So please turn in next week, and I'll have my special guest on so that men can learn about this.
Don't
you think
that's
a good
idea? I think it's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited. So we'll have an interesting show next week as well. So to everybody who's listening, I'm going to send my love to you for, you know, hopefully it'll be a good week. And if not, just write me at bondk@aol.com. Much thanks and love to you, Maggie. You're just a wonderful woman. I'm so happy you're part of my life and my support system. Thank you so much.
You're quite welcome.
All right, and we'll be back with Maggie again in a few months, and good night, everybody.
Good night,
Maggie. Bye-bye.